Welcome to Unabridged, the weekly podcast where teachers take on books. We're your hosts. I'm Jen, and I'm here today with Ashley and Sarah. We'll chat about our book club's pick of the month, discuss selected young adult novels, recommend related books, and share our nerdy English teacher love of reading. To follow along with our schedule, visit our website, unabridgedpod.com, where the books we read are linked for purchase. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at unabridgedpod, subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Podbean, and please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You want opinions about books? We've got them. Today we're discussing Tomi Adeyemi's Children of Blood and Bone. It is a YA fantasy novel that centers on three characters who live in Orisha, a fantasy world loosely based on the author's West African heritage. This world has lost its connection to magic. Zaylee is one of the Magi, individuals blessed with a connection to the gods who could do magic. The other two characters are siblings, the children of the king who killed an entire generation of Magi and who banished magic from the kingdom. Amari, the princess, has quietly struggled to meet her parents' expectations through a lifetime of trying to fit in and to resist her desire to leave her castle. Anan, the prince, has done everything his father wanted, becoming a captain in the military who will enforce magic's banishment. All three characters struggle with conflicts that have no easy answers, particularly as they come to know each other and their unique hidden challenges. So what do y'all think?
This is Sarah, and I love fantasy, so I love this book. It was totally different than any other fantasy book I've read. I loved Zaylee. She was just so strong, and I loved her struggles, and I loved how she fought. So I loved her. I loved most of the supporting characters. I thought it was really well done. It was just so much. I think we have a lot to talk about, but there was just so much that happened. But overall, I mean, it was definitely a 5-star book for me. Totally unlike anything I've read before, but however, having some of the same fantasy elements that I've liked in other series. But I really, really like this one.
Yeah, this is Ashley. And I loved every bit of it. And I feel like you said this in something in social media, Jen, but I had very high expectations. Yeah. And I think it's tough when you go into something with really high expectations for the book to deliver. And this one did. And I think that's really phenomenal. I think it really speaks to Adeyemi's talent and just how well crafted her story was, and how, it, like you said, Sarah, there's just so much going on in it, and yet it all fit together really nicely, and works well. And I'm already sad that the next book is so long in coming, because I just can't wait to see what's gonna happen in the trilogy.
Yeah, this is Jen. Ashley's right. I went in with very high expectations, and I had that moment at the beginning where I was expecting it to wow me from page one. I was like, this is good. But then by the end, I was just so drawn into the story, into the characters. I think Zaylee is really compelling. I kept finding myself, when I was looking over quotations again to prep for today's episode, I kept coming back to Amari. And I think she's a quiet character, but there's a lot in her story that we can discuss. And I agree with Sarah. I really liked the fact that this was a fantasy world inspired by a heritage that I don't know a lot about, and so it's nice sometimes to break free. You know, it's not the typical Western inspired fantasy story. It has that different angle, so it has different mythologies to draw on, different traditions to draw on, and I really enjoyed that part of it as well. So where do you all want to start? Let's talk a little bit about just the power of story and the way that Adeyemi draws on mythology throughout the book. So I really thought, you know, there are these times in the story that Zaylee is trying to get back in touch with magic and with her mother, who, here's our spoiler alert that we'll go for the rest of the episode, her mother who died when she was a child. And so her mother was a diviner who was killed. She's part of that generation of diviners who are killed by the king. And so Zaylee is trying to get in touch with her mother and also with her own connection to magic. And so there are these times that people tell the stories of the gods and how they handed magic down and how the diviners were created that I just thought were really lovely. I've always been a sucker for stories within stories and the stories behind how a culture comes to be. And so I thought those parts just added this resonance to the book that made it deeper than your typical I don't know. That's going to sound diminishing. Your typical YA fantasy novel. But I do feel like that lent resonance to it that maybe we don't see in some other stories.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it just adds this richness. And it, I think it's also another author, a testament to her storytelling. Mm-hmm. Another author who is so great at creating this world, but making, like, just, I felt like every moment I was there, like, I could see the gods mm-hmm. she was mm-hmm. speaking about. I could feel the tension, and I could, when they were, this happens a little bit later, but when they were in the cave, and they described the painting, and how the paintings came mm-hmm. to life, like, I felt like I was there and could picture it. So I agree, Jen. I just think it added so much depth to the story, and I feel like I learned a lot, even mm-hmm. though it was a fantasy book. I feel like I it connected me to these characters in a way that I don't always feel when I read mm-hmm. fantasy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with everything you all have said about that. And I just think I loved the power of story in this, and then also the power of, like, inner strength. I mean, I just mm-hmm. think back to Mama Agba right at the beginning, and where she was training before anything had even yes. happened, when she was training with the staff, and how, and all the discussion about using the staff instead of the sword mm-hmm. and how, you know, the staff served a different purpose. I was looking for that quote. But, you know, I just think that she talks so... I think the stories and the use of violence as a way to protect instead of a way to offend mm-hmm. or to attack is just really powerful. That both of those are like the, you know, inner strength, and we draw from within, and we do these things to support people and support ourselves instead of trying to lash out. I mean, I think so much of what Sauron is doing is like attacking yeah. and being... I mean, you know, he's oppressing, he's attacking on the offense, whereas mm-hmm. so much of what Zaylee is doing is drawing from, and Amari mm-hmm. Comes into this as well, and on, that's a lot of his struggle. It's like, yeah. which side of that is he on? But so much of that drawing from the inner strength, drawing from your heritage and your background and the stories of your people and the strength of your people to try to do something protective. Yeah, and I just, this quote that I stuck with me was, I teach the way of the staff to any girl who wants to learn, because in this world, there will always be men who wish you harm. Mm-hmm. But I started this training for the diviners, for all children of the fallen Magi. Though your ability to become a Magi has disappeared, the hatred and violence towards you remains. Mm-hmm. That is why we are here. That is why we train. And so I just think yeah. so much of that, and, you know, she goes on to talk about, I mean, I just really love that whole section. One more little quote here. She goes on to say, I teach you to be warriors in the garden, so you will never be gardeners in the war. Mm. I give you the strength to fight, but you all must learn the strength of restraint. Mm. And then she goes on to say, you must protect those who can't defend themselves. That is the way of the staff. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that... the power of story, but also the power of physical strength and, mm-hmm. you know, training, and how that can be used to help instead of to harm is just such a powerful part of this story. And part of what, going back to what you were saying, Jen, part of what makes Adeyemi's story stand out from a lot of other YA fantasy that, again, mm-hmm. I love. I mean, I love those stories, but I think that sometimes they're a little bit more one-dimensional than this one feels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think those quotations that you just read are a testament to Adeyemi's writing. I mean, yes. it was just, I was using book darts as I was reading, and I ran out of book darts by the end. And some of it is not about the plot at all. It wasn't because it was this big talking point. It was just because I would hit on a sentence that was just beautiful and that was just there to deepen the story. So I don't want to, I feel like that's probably not going to be our primary topic of conversation today, but I do want to acknowledge she is just a great writer.
Yes.
Who can just write a sentence that's just beautiful on its own. Yeah, one of the things I thought was really interesting was, you know, all of these people, Amari, Zaylee, and Inan, have all had training as warriors. But Zaylee and Amari in particular stood out to me as foils, because mm-hmm. Amari has in many ways resisted that, and she has feared that. She has these horrible scars that are a testament to the fact that she and Inan were set against each other. And so she has sort of retreated into herself and denied that part of herself. Mm-hmm. And so her character arc was really interesting to me. I think that's one of the reasons I kept coming back, because people think she is privileged and that she has had this easy life. But there's a quotation, I don't know if I can find it right now, but she talks about the golden chains that were binding her, mm-hmm. that she was in many ways oppressed differently from Zaylee, but she was just as oppressed in her life. She had, you know, her choices were also, what she really didn't have choices. She was bound in this castle. Her windows all faced inward. I thought that was such a great symbol, yes. that her father built this place for her and she could only look inside the castle. She couldn't see anything outside. So to watch her come into an understanding of who she was, of how she was powerful, that she could be powerful in a different way from Zaylee and from Anon, I just thought her character was so rich, so textured. There weren't very many one-dimensional characters in this story. Mm-hmm. Even secondary characters showed depth, but I thought in particular our three protagonists just continued becoming more complex as the book went on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought Amari was totally captivating. And I loved in the beginning, I mean, Zaylee is so dismissive of her and cruel to her. Mm-hmm. And I mean, rightfully so. It's easy to understand where Zaylee is coming from, but how she stands her ground and she doesn't, I think it's so easy to get lost and to back down in that. And I just feel like she didn't, you know, and she definitely had a quiet way that was different from either Anon or Zaylee. I mean, all of them are different from Amari. And yet, in a lot of ways, I mean, she's just so powerful. Powerful. Yeah, I just think about her at the end, you know, powerful beyond measure. Mm-hmm. And I think just amazing that how she comes into her own and comes into fruition and just watching her grow is really an amazing part of the book.
I was just going to say, when I think of her, like throughout the whole book, I always think of quiet strength because I think it's really easy to have to be powerful and, you know, kind of show it like Zaylee does. Mm-hmm. I mean, she wears her power on her sleeve. Like she knows she's powerful and she uses it. But I felt like, and I loved her, but I also thought Amari, she just had this quiet strength and she, and I just loved the way, like you said, Ashley, that she developed throughout the story. But she always, I mean, but it never changed. She only used the sword when she really needed to. And she, I mean, I just loved her. And I loved the way that her story progressed as the novel went on.
Yeah. There was a great moment. It's about midway through the book when Zane, who there is this, you know, love connection between Amari and Zane. And he is trying to protect her. And she says, Zane says, just because you can fight doesn't mean you're meant to. And she says, Zane, do not tell me what I am meant to do. His words stab like a needle, locking me back inside the palace walls. Amari, sit up straight. Do not eat that. That's more than enough dessert for you. No. No more. I have lived that life before and lost my dearest friend because of it. Now that I've escaped, I shall never return. With my escape, I must do more. And I think that was one of the first times that she is really seeing how much she was chained in and the fact that she is declaring that she will take control over who she is and that even Zane, who she really likes and she really appreciates what he's trying to do, but she's going to resist that kind of control as well. Just a brilliant, brilliant development of a character.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned the love interest, but really when I think about back on the book, like, I really don't think about the two love connections that much at all. I mean, and I understand why it's there, but it's just the strength, especially of the female characters, that I just appreciate so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was a really minor part of the book. And like you said, I understand why it's there, and but I think it was really secondary to Adeyemi's message and to what she's trying to do and to the messages she's sending in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with just, like, loyalty and how relationships in general impact the choices that you make and the way that you move forward. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the love interest had to do with that feeling of fealty and having to feel connected and then I think for Anon, you know, it really shows the struggle that he has where he'll do anything mm-hmm. that it takes to, and I do think that that enriches the story, yeah. that he'll do anything at all to save Zaylee.
Yes.
Even if it is counter to what he believes needs to happen, you know, mm-hmm. I think there's definitely some of that in the end where he's just so desperate mm-hmm. to do whatever it takes to save her that, that he would let anything else go. And, you know, I think we can understand that. It's not totally foreign
yes,
to yeah. understanding that feeling of, like, you know, wanting to spare someone. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I did think his arc wore thin most for me. Mm-hmm. And I did think his struggle was compelling. And, I thought Adeyemi did a good job expressing his struggle to meet his father's expectations and that he has this role that he's trying to meet. And he really does love his country and he wants to protect his country. It was a little bit like that back and forth. It repeated a lot. Like he would end up on one side and then yes. the other and then the yeah. other.
I thought that too. I was like, haven't we resolved this?
Yeah.
Like, and I do think people do that, right?
Yeah.
People are wishy-washy for sure. But I did think there were several times that I also was like, haven't we resolved yeah. this already? Like, can we move forward? And then, you know, I think he had some great revelations where he thought Orisha before all else. Mm-hmm. And then realized, like, maybe putting Orisha before all else doesn't mean supporting my father's agenda.
Right.
And I think that's a hard revelation for him that, you know, him having to grapple with the fact that his father is not the country mm-hmm. and that there is a way to support the country that he feels loyal to without affirming his father's beliefs and agenda. And I, you know, I think that is a struggle, but I also yeah. was kind of like, come on, buddy.
There was a point again, this was about midway through the book. And it's a conversation between Zaylee and Anon. And Zaylee says that monster took magic away so that he could slaughter thousands. He took magic away so the innocent couldn't defend themselves. Anon pauses. The air continues to warm as guilt creeps into his expression. He did what he thought was right. He speaks slowly, but he wasn't wrong to take magic away. He was wrong for the oppression that followed. I dig my hands into my hair, skin growing hot at Anon's ignorance. How can he defend his father? How can he not see what's truly going on? Our lack of power and our oppression are one and the same, Anon. Mm-hmm. Without power, we're maggots. Without power, the monarchy treats us like scum. And Anon responds, power is not the answer. It will only intensify the fight. Maybe you can't trust my father. And then they get into a discussion about trust. But I think that I loved that the that without power, our lack of power and our oppression are one and the same.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great statement of one of the messages of the book, that when you're cut off from your magic, you're cut off from your connection to your past, the oppression is built in.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that harkens back to the use of the word maggot throughout the book mm-hmm. and the power of words to oppress and to yeah. hurt and to put people in, you know, to put them down. And I just think how over and over, and I mean, where he carves it, that just, again, the symbolic ramifications of that, in addition to the physical
yeah.
pain that just, you know, everything you can to break someone. Mm-hmm. And I just think, I mean, of course we've seen that in real life over right. and over again. And that's where I love that this book, while fantasy, speaks so mm-hmm. well to so many of the things happening in our society.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I really like that. I didn't like that part mm-hmm. of the book, but when he carves maggot into Zaylee's back, and later on, one of the healers is mm-hmm. like, I can heal it, but she's like, no, you can't. I mean, right. even if the scar's gone, mm-hmm. it remains, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, I thought that was really powerful. Yeah.
And that's a place that I appreciated. So Anon has this ability to feel what others are feeling and to see their stories. And I thought that when he is feeling what Zaylee is going through, as that word is being carved in her back, I thought that was one of the better uses of that ability, that he has this power that he's denying. And then you see why, you know, not only because he feels like his father will hate him, but also because it's hard to feel others' pain. Mm-hmm. And so he is constantly resisting. He has a lot of pain on his own. Mm-hmm. And then he's resisting wanting to take on other people's pain. Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting through the book too, because there are so many that the power makes them vulnerable while mm-hmm. giving them power. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Zaylee has this power over death, but in order to have it, she has to feel all of the deaths go through her. That Anon has this ability to read other people, but he has to feel what they've felt. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that sort of heightened empathy on both of their parts was really, again, just a really interesting way to make a power more complex. That it's a power, but it's also a vulnerability.
And I think also the author did a great job talking about how, well, allowing Zaylee to see how the power of magic could also be, you know, devastating too.
Yes.
And so I really like the way that it went back and forth, kind of playing. Because, like, throughout the book, I'm like, yes, I want them all to have magic. Oh, wait, maybe not everybody should have magic. You know, I just kept going back and forth because there was destruction too. And, you know, power in the wrong hands can still be, you know, detrimental. And I liked how she showed that there were some diviners that also are, you know, there are bad diviners too. You know, there are people that won't be able to use magic responsibly. And I really appreciated all the layers that she brought to the, just the theme of having power or not having power.
Yeah, that's what I loved. I mean, Kwame was like a really secondary character, but he was a great example of that, where when they captured them, I mean, not just using his magic, but also, you know, when do you hurt someone in order to gain information?
Yes.
When do you use torture to have an impact? And I think it showed him differing from Zoo and not wanting to have her come because he was like, we need this information. And again, you could see that he was on the right side in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. When he ultimately sacrifices himself for the cause.
That's right. But I think, you know, and then of course when he was burning. I mean, I think like so painful.
Yeah.
But did so much destruction so quickly. And again, I think just spoke well to her concern. Because I think there were times where I had a heart, like I was like, of course they need magic. Right. I mean, of course they need magic because they have to be able to fight back against this unbelievable hegemonic society. Like, yes, you need your magic. But I think that moments like that with Kwame, where he is sacrificing and yet causing this horrendous destruction, showed like, oh, maybe, you know, maybe there is some damage there. And not even in the wrong hands, but just to be so powerful. What does it mean to be so powerful?
Yeah, I thought that was great, too, because, like you, Ashley, at the beginning, I was like, of course they should all have magic.
Yeah. And I had a hard time, like, even rationalizing that side of it.
Because Sauron, you know, is not empathetic at all.
Right.
He's the one character. I mean, I did feel bad. His parents have been murdered horribly. His family's been murdered horribly. His first family.
His first wife.
So part of me was wondering if that is going to be a storyline, that that might not actually be the case. Like, throughout, because Inan has power.
Right.
And so, like, I created this whole backstory. I have no idea. because I don't want him to be sympathetic at all. I guess because I just did not like him at all.
Yeah.
But, like, part of me wonders if, you know, maybe that could be another story, is the fact that maybe, maybe, you know, the background is different. I don't know. I was totally me pulling something out of the air, but that's kind of,
that
was in my mind.
Well, because at first, I mean, so he's against anybody having magic. Therefore, of course we want people to have magic because he is the bad guy. And then Inan, you know, is struggling with that. But I assume throughout, well, he's going to pick the right side by the end of the book, of course. But then Zaylee starts wondering if everyone should have magic. And that's when it became really interesting, because that is what she's fighting for. And yet she has some hesitation, because there are people who would do the wrong thing with it. And then you start thinking, well, if you know some people would do the wrong thing, then who has the right to decide who gets it?
Right.
Do you have to put yourself in a place of power, of deciding, of playing God, right? Of deciding who has the magic and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And none of those questions have answers at all. So, I mean, just again, the complexity, the nuance of the novel are really striking.
And I think, I think that part where Zaylee, where they're fighting at the end at the temple, and she is so driven. Well, after she sees her father, and he's killed, and she is so angry, and she is just, you know, calling on her magic, and then she destroys the scroll. Like, I felt like that was, you know, she was not in control.
Yes,
right?
That's right.
She was being driven by, of course, I mean, like, you can totally understand why she's using her magic in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it disintegrates the scroll, you know, you can see then why it's hard, you know, where is that boundary? And
right.
I really loved and the more we talk about it, the more I'm just in awe of her.
Yeah,
there's skill so much to it
in this book, and the way that she created and crafted the story.
Well, and there are all these beautiful parallels, right? So she has lost control. Inan has the time that you know, he's been trying to repress his magic because everything in him hates that part of himself because of the way he was raised. And then you see he loses control and he kills Kaya. And so that, of course, makes him fear more. Yeah, I just...
Oh, that part's so painful.
It is, because he's so desperately trying not to hurt her, but he's angry with her. And then when you see that him repressing his magic is making him sick, and Zaylee's trying to convince him that if he learns to control it, then he'll feel healthy again. He'll feel well again. And he looks so great and he looks so healthy when he lets his magic out. But it is scary because it does kill people. And how do you learn to control it without going through that process?
Yeah, when the stakes are so high. Right.
Well, I think she did such a great job. When I reflect back on other novels, you know, because fantasy has that violent element often. And I think about other books that I've read. But I feel like what she does so well is, like, I felt every death. I mean, you know, everything she described, like every death, Zoo's death, I felt that. Kaya's death. I mean, all the deaths, even even if they were not necessarily on the right side, I still felt them, you know, or the, you know, if you're thinking of the good and evil or whatever, or bad and good. But I just felt every death. And I mean, it took a toll, you know, whereas in other books,
Sometimes it's not the case.
Which is horrible to say, but it truly is.
Right. Or you get caught up in the action. And so, yes, of course, it means something, but only... As in, it's a tally to get you to the end.
Yeah, I think about the arena part, which, first of all, I loved. I loved that that happened. Like, of course, I didn't love that happened. Yeah. It was a horrible thing to happen.
Yeah.
I love that she included that element of using people as sport and slaughtering them in mass ways. Because, again, I mean, there are just far too many historical examples of that. And so I think I liked how it was in there, but that wasn't the focus.
Yeah.
But even in that, where all of the people are dying and they're having to kill other people, I think, like you said, Sarah, even in that moment where it was tons of people dying, you still felt all of the loss.
Yeah.
And you felt the loss weighing on them.
Yes.
And I thought that was just so powerful, because I think it just showed that every life matters and that even, again, even the people, and I mean, of course, the people in that situation were not opponents, but even when it was people who were sort of on the opposing side, you still, like Kaya, I mean, I think she was driven, I mean, she would have killed any one of them in a moment, would have killed Anon. I mean, she was, I mean, that was why, you know, that was part of why he was so worked up. Like, she was totally unwilling to see, I mean, like Sauron, I think, you know, loving him and supporting his cause caused her to be completely unable to see the other side at all. But even so, you know, you mourn that death. And I think that that part was just really powerful for me. That even in those sort of mass action moments, where it is like the people on the ship and the, you know, there's just a lot happening. You're never forgetting that. You know, isn't it? Yeah, it goes beyond being just a story where, I mean, like y'all said, it's just easy to sometimes dismiss that when it's happening in a big scope kind of way.
Well, I think about it with the Hunger Games. Yeah. And, you know, in the Hunger Games, the deaths that I feel are Rue's death, you know, and just, if I'm just looking at the first book, but like all the other tributes that died, I don't feel like, I can't remember their names, you know, but like, I feel like I just felt the deaths, and I feel like I remember these characters' names, and even Kwame, who was not a huge character in the book, I just, when he sacrificed himself, I was like, I was crying, you know, like, I just, just so good. Just, I mean, I know that's not nearly the adjective that needs to describe this book, but it's just... I mean, heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching, but also just, I don't know.
Like, tender. These characters I think there's a lot of tenderness. And like you said before, Jenna, about the empathy, I think the fact that Anon and Zaylee have this sort of, like, sort of supernatural ability to feel this even deeper empathy does enrich that component of not being able to kind of dismiss or compartmentalize as easily.
It was interesting. I read just yesterday at The Atlantic had a review of this. And so one thing that they point out, and we can link to this in the show notes, but that watching the cinematic adaptation of Collins's trilogy, Adeyemi told Teen Vogue, was the catalyst for her own allegorical world building. She wanted to respond to the racist backlash against the film version, which I thought was interesting. Both that she was inspired by you know, this really popular work. And clearly you see that connection in the scene that we were just talking about with the ships and all that. But also that she had kind of a specific response to the movie and to the fact that people didn't like the casting of black actors in prominent roles. Mm-hmm. Suzanne Collins definitely spoke out and said, yes, that was appropriate given what she was envisioning. But, you know, then in Adeyemi's, but there is no question, right, that these characters are black, that that is part of their culture, that they are dealing with their own racism within the society. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a brief moment at the beginning, but Zaylee's mom is talking about wanting, or no, Amari's mom is wanting, is talking about wanting to lighten her skin,
right,
that she would be so much more beautiful. So I think there are these tiny little moments that don't impact the plot overall, but where we're seeing some things that are really current, and we'll talk about the author's note a little later, I think, but really current that are impacting the way the story is told.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, like, I loved all those details. And I think, you know, the use of the white hair.
Oh, yes.
And the way that that physical attribute mm-hmm. spoke to this quality that then people in society judged, I right. think, was also
and that they can't
really
cover
powerful.
It. Like, yeah. Do people try to cover it with dye?
Yeah, and constantly yeah. trying to yeah. spray his. I mean, I loved that constant reminder that he wanted to conceal this part of his identity, mm-hmm. and in order to do that, he had to change the color of his hair
right.
and had to do it over and over and over again. And so, you know, I think there's just a lot of that, that, like you said, Jen, I mean, it's all in these details, but that just is commentary mm-hmm, on yeah. so much of what happens in society and the way that we try to change ourselves mm-hmm. to just be able to blend in. And yeah, yeah, I think that's really powerful.
I want to go back just a minute to Zaylee, because I think we've talked about her as this strong character who does have some reservations. She has some fear about giving magic. But her character arc is also interesting because I think mm-hmm. she and Amari kind of have opposing character arcs. So Zaylee starts out really strong, and you see she's yeah. definitely struggling to protect her father, to live up to her brother's expectations. She feels like she's constantly messing up. But there's a moment where she and Anand are talking, and he says, "You don't have to be afraid. I am always afraid. I don't know what shocks me more, the power in my voice or the words themselves. Afraid. I am always afraid. It's a truth I locked away years ago, a fact I fought hard to overcome, because when it hits, I'm paralyzed. I can't breathe. I can't talk. All at once, I crumple to the ground, clasping my palm over my mouth to stifle the sobs. It doesn't matter how strong I get, how much power my magic wields. They will always hate me in this world. I will always be afraid." And so I think how much of her physicality and her outward bravery is masking this inner fragility. That moment just touched me so mm-hmm. much, because I thought she feels so deeply the hatred that all of these characters feel toward her that she can't escape. And her only way out of it is to try to get in touch with the very thing that they hate the most.
And just hating her for what she is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, that there's nothing for hating all the Diviners for what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that just being something that they cannot get. I mean, Anand and his dad, you know, really shows that
yes.
struggle also, because, like, you know, his belief that, I mean, you have to believe this about the people you love, right?
Right.
But his belief that his dad could get past it
mm-hmm.
and us seeing that, of course,
no,
he cannot, because, you know, his cruelty is that strong.
Yes.
His beliefs in the danger of magic is that strong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think all of that his love for his son cannot overcome it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Anand's wanting to believe that he can.
Right.
And I think that is in contrast to Zaylee, who is, you know, when she acknowledges it,
mm-hmm.
knows that
yeah.
those things that people, she feels afraid rightfully, because she knows that people will not be able to, that her society is not going to be able to just get past
mm-hmm.
this fear that they have of her. And then because of the fear that they have, the actions that they take are cruel and unjust.
Yeah, gosh. And just listening to you guys talking, the commentary on the
yep.
state of our
mm-hmm.
world right now, it's
yeah
quite startling.
Yeah. So y'all know I love symbols. And so I just thought that the fact that Anand is carrying this pawn in his pocket that we then discover is basically poisoning him, right? Yeah. So this is a symbol for him of his father's love, although it came out of a time that his dad was yelling at him and angry with him. So
yeah,
that
I had a little bit of a hard time with, I mean, just his love for his dad. I think it's hard to swallow it sometimes of like, how?
It's that abusive attack. I mean,
I do think so.
I don't think his dad loved him at all. Like, no. I think even before he knew that he had magic, I don't think he loved him. I think he appreciated that this was in some way a continuation of his power, but I don't think it was ever love.
Well, I think that, I mean, throughout the book, I feel like she makes a point to his first family was the family that he loved.
And this he was felt his replacement like that destroyed family. Him.
Because he didn't even, because he didn't even love his wife. I mean, he had this he loved Kaya. Mm-hmm. I mean, it appeared. We didn't really get, I mean, proof except them talking about it. But I mean, I feel like he felt that both Amari and Inan were just pawns in his, you know, in his agenda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It was this multi-layered. So then the fact that it's made up of this material that is basically poison, you know, and that he's clutching it constantly when he needs strength, what he is clutching is making him weaker. It just works on a lot of nice levels. Mm-hmm. So, again, I just think Adeyemi is just great.
Yeah, so good.
So I feel like I backed away from the author's note, Sarah, because I thought we were heading there, but I was like, I feel like that should be the last thing we talk about, probably.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know. Do you guys want to talk about the ending first? We had a little pre-discussion about the ending, because it is definitely ambiguous, which I think is great.
Yes.
The ending of a book.
Yes.
Especially for a trilogy.
Yeah.
But for knowing that it just came out and that I
know, we're looking at least a year. Well, and I love that it continues. I think you were going to say, Jen.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I love that it continues the question about, is it better to bring magic back or not? And I like that goes unanswered, and that we know that her mom was helping her, that we know we have some resolution with her dad, and so all of that was really powerful, but then for her in the end to still be questioning what she's done, I think is powerful.
And that scene with her mom and her not wanting to leave, like, I mean, again, goes back to that just feeling every bit, just knowing how much easier it would be for Zaylee to be able to stay, and the fact that she has to go, and also feeling that, you know, being a mother, you know, you feel that ache in her mom when she's like, you have to go back. And I mean, like, oh gosh, I feel like I'm getting teared up just talking about it, but you just feel every single thread and every, and you just feel that, and you feel that connection from your, like, as a mother, like I do with my kids, you know, you feel that string that is always attached no matter the circumstances. Take a deep breath. But I mean, it just, oh gosh, just the power of words and the way that she uses them is just amazing.
Well, and she uses that blood connection to bring magic back. And then, so in the epilogue, this is the very last page, and Zaylee says, it didn't work, I force out, but Amari shakes her head. She holds up a bleeding hand, and in the darkness it swirls with vibrant blue light. A white streak crackles like lightning in her black hair. For a moment, I don't know what to make of the sight. Then my blood chills to ice. And that's the end! So I think it's just fabulous that, what does it mean if everyone, if not just all of the diviners, however you want to say it, not all of them have this magic, but now everyone has a connection to magic, which is an assumption, right? It doesn't come out and say that, but that's the conclusion that I think makes the most sense. What does that mean? And how scary is that? Because there are some bad people out there.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. Just reinforcing that question of who makes the decision, who has the right, and then what do you do when people do have that kind of power?
Yeah. Ugh. So good.
All right. So I finished the page, but like my mind was blown. And then I turned the page and there's an author's note, which, you know, sometimes you're like, okay, great. Of course I'll read the author's note because it's there.
Yeah.
But this one just,
it's amazing.
Oh my gosh. So Adeyemi says, I shed many tears before I wrote this book, many tears as I revised it. And even as it sits in your hands now, I know that I will shed tears again. Although riding giant lionaires and performing sacred rituals might be in the realm of fantasy, all the pain, fear, sorrow, and loss in this book is real. Children of Blood and Bone was written during a time where I kept turning on the news and seeing stories of unarmed black men, women, and children being shot by the police. I felt angry, afraid, and angry and helpless. But this book was the one thing that made me feel like I could do something about it. I told myself that if just one person could read it and have their hearts or minds changed, then I would have done something meaningful against a problem that often feels so much bigger than myself. And then she goes on. I won't read the whole thing, but
yeah.
And I felt that through the book, right? Yes. That it's so relevant. And that's what I love about fantasy always, is that it is in this other world. But I think fantasy authors do such a great job of taking on issues that matter to us. And that sometimes it's a little easier to think about them if there's a bit of distance. Mm-hmm. And in some ways that's clarifying, because you can have that distance and you can think about it. But this one, I don't even know that I felt the distance. No. And I mean, as I was reading, it felt really current.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think about a lot of times I like that, especially when you think about teens, mm-hmm. and, you know, the young adult audience that's not just adult, but, you know, kids reading books, that a lot of times it can help them to process things mm-hmm. that they otherwise can't process. And so I think that is really powerful in this book, that there are kids, of all races who mm-hmm. could relate to this in a way that maybe not is yeah. accessible. Some of the more direct, I mean, there are a lot of works right now, thank goodness, that are taking on mm-hmm. This issue of police brutality and our society and the oppression that's happening in our society. And just, I mean, exactly what she says in the author's name, like all the things day in and day out that, mm-hmm. that we're having to grapple with. But I think that this can reach a different group yeah. of kids. And I yes. really like that part that, like you said, Jen, I think to me, it's very apparent that mm-hmm. all those things are there and that the connections are there. But I think that it can hit kids right. a little bit differently. And just like she says, like if it makes people reconsider a mm-hmm. little bit and think about some of their own judgments or attitudes or the things happening around them that maybe they haven't thought about very mm-hmm. deeply, then that, you know, that can really help. That yeah. can help bring about the kind of culture change that needs to happen.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I mean, the author's note, I had an advanced reader copy of it, so I didn't have the author's note, and thank goodness I got to read Jen's. But like, I was just struck when really Zoo, you know, because she was mm-hmm. she was a minor character, but a large character. Yes. You know, she really represented a lot. And when she, and the author's note, when she talks about her and her, I mean, what she symbolizes in the mm-hmm. book, it is just gut-wrenching. And yeah. it is just, yeah. it's horrifying for me as a human being to know that I live in a world where this is happening. Mm-hmm. And I think this book, like you said, both of you said, it is going to appeal to a broader a different audience mm-hmm. than some of the other stuff that's out now. But what it has to say is the same thing yeah. as yes. those books.
Right.
And I just appreciate it so much. It just, mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's going to be one of my favorite books yeah. of all time. I mean, yeah. because I really think that it's cutting edge mm-hmm. and I yeah. appreciate it so yeah. much. Before we get to pairings, we want to take a moment to remind you to go to unabridgedpod.com and check out our upcoming list of books. Every little bit helps. So if you use our links, we will get just a little bit from those sales. We also remind you to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at unabridgedpod. And also, and most importantly, we'd like for you to rate us on iTunes and Stitcher. And if you can, write a review. That really helps people find the podcast and lets us reach a broader audience.
All right, so this is Jen. I am pairing Toni Morrison's Song of Solomon with Children of Blood and Bone. I have to say it has been a long time since I have read this book, and so I am pairing it really on the basis of ideas and of feelings more than any detail, so please excuse my kind of vague description here. What struck me about Children of Blood and Bone is just, again, I said this at the beginning, but the way Adeyemi uses her West African heritage and the mythologies associated with that to inform this fantasy world that she creates. And in Song of Solomon, Toni Morrison is doing the same thing. One of the main storylines in that book is focusing on Milkman Dead and the power of flight. And I remember even before I read this book in grad school, I had heard someone speaking about how so many people assumed that she was using like the myth of Icarus and Greek mythology as the background for Song of Solomon, but that actually she was using these African folk tales about men who could fly. And so I think, you know, Toni Morrison clearly is a very different author than Adeyemi, and yet they are both reaching into this mythology to talk about contemporary issues. Yeah, it's a great book. It's one of my favorite Toni Morrison books. So again, that's Toni Morrison's Song of Solomon.
This one, I love that book as well. I was thinking about how I haven't read it in a long time either. Yeah. And I was like, man, I should reread that. I love that so much. So I wanted to talk about Kristin Cashore's Graceling series. So I'm going to focus on Graceling, but there are three books, and they're companion books, so they, you know, they fit together nicely, but they don't have to be read in a particular succession. But anyway, I think that the similarities, of course, this is a fantasy series also. It's also young adult. And one of the reasons that I thought about it is because there are people in the society who have magical abilities, and they call them graces. So if you're a Graceling, then you have this magical ability, but they're discriminated against very heavily in society. And so similarly, you know, feared, oppressed, judged, and persecuted by the society. And so I think like that's what made me think about the connection, is just that it again, if it, you know, if you're, especially if you're thinking about teens who are enjoying young adult fantasy, this is a great series. I don't think that it has quite the depth that Adeyemi's book has, but I do appreciate she hits on a lot of gender issues, and she definitely makes some commentary about the power of women and the role of women, and the ways that women's choices can be different from sort of like traditional tropes. And so I like that aspect for sure. I think that holds up. And I just thought that the series is interesting. The characters are rich, and that it does have some definite similarities as far as the traits of the main characters and the way that the society is structured. So again, that was Graceling by Kristin Cashore.
Yeah, that's a great. I did that first book with my book club several years ago, and they just loved that book. It is so readable. She's a great author.
I'm gonna have to read that because I love fantasy, but I haven't read that one.
Yeah, would love it.
I'm sure I'll love it. So my book is actually a little bit different. Mine is actually nonfiction, which is probably surprising. But the book is The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind, Creating Currents of Electricity and Hope by William Kamkwamba and Brian Mueller. And why this book really spoke to me as a good pairing for Children of Blood and Bone is that William is... he lives in Malawi, and he is the victim of horrendous circumstances by a corrupt government. The family really depends on crops and what they can raise. They're kind of self-sustaining, and there's this horrible period of drought and famine. And there in his culture, there's a lot of magical elements. People kind of think rely on more spiritual type remedies rather than science. And so they really are just horribly oppressed, and they don't have any food. And what William does is he takes it upon himself to educate himself to create wind energy for his town. And it is the most amazing story that I've ever read. I mean, I tell everyone about it because, and I did it with my students because it is just, he was, I believe it's been a little while also for me since I've read it. I've read it several times, but he was like 13 or 14, and he taught himself. He didn't speak English. He taught himself using a book written in English, and he first had to learn the English and then teach himself how to make wind energy. Oh, wow. And it is a remarkable story of overcoming adversity, never giving up and doing this awesome thing for his community. And I feel like some of the parallels with Children of Blood and Bone are just Zaylee's love for her community and love for her family and love for her culture and tradition and the what she's willing to do to help them. And so it's a little bit different than Children of Blood and Bone, but it is an equally impressive, just incredible story of overcoming adversity. And so that's children. I'm sorry. No, that is not children. That is The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind, Creating Currents of Electricity and Hope by William Kamkwamba. So, I mean, it's autobiographical and Brian Mueller. And I cannot recommend it enough.
Yeah.
And also there is there's a young reader's edition. There's a grown-up edition, and there's also a picture book, so all readers can read it.
And the TED Talk's really great, too. We could link to that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, and he's fabulous. He's a fabulous speaker, and he actually writes in the book about giving the TED Talk, so it's really cool. He'd never seen a computer. It's just awesome. You gotta read it.
So moving on to Classroom Connections. Oh my gosh, would I teach this book? I just think, I mean, it is long, so I do think for a certain kids might have trouble getting through all of it. I think it would be great for Lit Circles. I would pair it with something like The Hate U Give. I think it would be interesting to look at, because I think they're dealing with the same issues, but from obviously very different genres, perspectives. So I think it would be great in a series of Lit Circles. I would definitely have it on my shelf. Again, the whole class thing, I don't know, just because it is so long, and if a kid's not into fantasy, it might be a challenge to get through it. I don't know. What do y'all think about?
Yeah, this is actually, and I think I would hesitate. In general, I wouldn't teach fantasy whole class. I mean, basically, I try to stay away from things that are really genre-specific because I think you can lose a kid. Although, I mean, I've done dystopian, but I think that's a little bit maybe as opposed to, like, if it gets out there in sci-fi and fantasy, which both of which I love, I think you can really lose kids and therefore not accomplish your purpose. But yeah, I love the idea of pairing it, giving giving kids choices with some of the more. I mean, we certainly it could be paired with some texts that are taking on police brutality head on. I think Dear Martin, All American Boys, The Hate U Give. I think you could offer some different options that are taking on the issue more head on, and then say, you know, at a Amy is also commenting on this and says in her author's note that this is her commentary, but it's a very different approach, and so that could generate some really great discussion with students. So I think it would work nicely like that, and I think certainly it could fit in Lit Circles that deal with a lot of different issues. I mean, you could do Lit Circles about power dynamics, Lit Circles about society issues and the way that we handle difference or different abilities within society. So I think there's a lot that could be done there.
I keep thinking about, I used to do dystopian Lit Circles, and I think that could be interesting because we would always look at, you know, what went wrong with the society, what were they aiming for, and how did it go wrong? And I think you could do the same with this. You know, what were the aims? Maybe some people thought they were noble, and then how did they go awry? So I think you could pair it. Yeah, there are so many different themes you could pull out from that overall book.
For middle school, for eighth grade specifically, I would definitely have it on my shelf. I doubt I would teach it whole class because a 600-page book is a lot for a middle schooler to feel good about. I mean, no matter how good it is.
It's not, you know, I think there are some middle grade books that are really long. That, like, I think about the Harry Potter series, for example. Those are really long, but they move for younger kids much more easily, whereas this one would be work.
I think so. And also, like, I mean, I taught struggling readers, so some of the names and just trying to get over those barriers would be difficult. But, I mean, I can think of kids right now that I've had in the past that I wish I could give this book to because it's great. But I would definitely like to offer it with some of the other, like, some of Jason Reynolds' works that you all have commented on. And I think that it definitely would have a place in the middle school classroom. But I would definitely probably not teach a whole class just because it's so long.
Yeah.
And it's a lot for a middle schooler to get through 600 pages. And often my principal would want me to read it aloud or have, or somehow ensure that they're reading it. And that is a lot to read out loud.
Do you have comments or opinions about what you heard today? We would love to hear them. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher, on Instagram and Twitter at UnabridgedPod, and on the web at unabridgedpod.com. Thanks for listening to Unabridged.